Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in. We'll play them later. Give me a 2 for Tuesday. That's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Yeah. So right now, we're going to talk about cars and automotive-related stuff. We've got some news stuff to jump into here. It's always great to have Tom Appel on, and he's here to answer any and all of your car or automotive-related questions. So get your phone calls in now or texts now at 312-981-7200 for talk or text, 312-981-7200. Tom is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And he is with us. He joins us every month. And let's welcome Tom back to the show. Tom, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. My pleasure. First of all, like as we always do, tell everybody about Consumer Guide Automotive and all that great stuff.
Yeah, if you're looking for a new car or a used car, you should read about them, check them out first. Do that at consumerguide.com. If you're not looking for a car but you just want to have some fun, go to the same place and click on the blog tab, the cgdailydrive.com blog. You can go there directly or go there through consumerguide.com. Either way you get there, we try to have some fun with the news. We look back at old cars. We love car culture. It's just a fun place to hang out.
That's outstanding. That's Consumer Guide Automotive, so check that out. All right, Tom, what are you driving? Let's get to that one. What have you been driving lately?
Oh, man, I scored for the holiday weekend. Scored.
Okay.
I ended up in the BMW Z4, which is BMW's new compact convertible. It is a two-seater, and it is a delight to drive.
Is that right?
Yeah, this is an interesting car. This is the car that Toyota and BMW worked together on. So from this joint venture, Toyota is going to get a car called Supra. So the Supra name is back. You should start seeing those on the road about now. And BMW gets a new Z4.
Wow. All right. Well, so you're enjoying this. When do you stop driving this one?
Unfortunately, tomorrow morning.
Oh.
But the weather's been convertible perfect this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Boy, that sounds like a fun car.
Yeah,
what else has been passing through the office? What else have you guys been driving and talking about?
You know what we just had through the office is the new GMC Sierra, which is GMC's big pickup truck. This is a big moneymaker for General Motors. It's the companion to the Chevrolet Silverado. I liked it a lot. The thing we drove was really loaded, and there's a lot of examples of this now in big pickups where they're more luxury cars than they are pickups.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was just shy of $70,000.
Whoa!
But it looked like it. It felt like it. It's if you want to load a truck up that much, you can. It's not like the price is too high. It's like there's just a lot of stuff there.
Yeah. Wow, 70 grand.
70 grand, yeah.
Whew, man.
Crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy. That is crazy. All right. All right, let's see. We already got questions for you, Tom.
Okay.
We're going to get to some of the news, and I can't wait to talk to you about you wrote an article about the Cars and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
What a great car movie that is, huh?
Oh my God, I love that movie. I flat out love that movie.
Oh, me too, man. Me too.
Yeah.
I was just talking about it with Steve and Johnny. They filled in this morning. We were just talking about it. They saw it and loved it as well. But man, yeah, the cars are just so cool in that. And especially the convertible, the ragtop that Brad Pitt drives.
Yeah, that is great. I love to see a trashed car in a movie.
Yeah. I also just love the scene where he forces the guy to change his tire. You know, that's one of my favorite. I loved it. It's such a great. But we'll get to that a little bit later on. So Carrie sends in a text that says, Tom, is Volvo still thinking about a coupe? Also, in general, can you recommend a good coupe? I have two SUVs and would like a change when the time comes.
Wow, the coupe is almost completely dead. It is surprising how few coupes there are. No, BMW, Volvo has not built a coupe since the C30, which disappeared something like 7 or 8 years ago. Yeah. Volvo is likely to bring back a new coupe under its Polestar brand, but that's going to be a very high-performance electric vehicle and probably not what our texter is talking about or thinking about. If you're looking for a luxury coupe, Mercedes-Benz still sells a coupe version of the C-Class, and BMW still sells the 4 Series, which is essentially a coupe version of the 3 Series. Both of those are fun.
What, is there a reason why there aren't any more coupes?
Yeah, there's just no market for them anymore.
Really?
Yeah, all the remaining coupes are, if you discount sports cars like the Camaro and the Mustang and the Challenger, all the coupes are really luxury cars now.
Okay. All right. Another question for Tom. Looking for a cool electric car with great range and maybe a hybrid and is roomy enough for my surfboard. Any suggestions, or do I need to wait for the VW bus concept car?
Wow, roomy enough for a surfboard. I don't know about anything you can put a surfboard in unless it's a six-footer.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm assuming this. I'm assuming that this person is not texting in from Chicago.
No. Oh,
I don't see a lot. I don't see a lot of surfing on Lake Michigan. So,
yeah, the closest thing probably is the Tesla Model X, which is a fairly large crossover, and that's got all sorts of range. That gets it close to 300 miles.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
properly equipped, very expensive, but it's got the space.
But it's got the space for your surfboard.
Yeah.
Okay. 773 area code said, saw an article that a record number of luxury cars coming off leases but didn't mention where to find these.
Well, if that is the case, and I believe it is, they should be everywhere. But the best place to find them probably is just to do a search locally and just look for the kind of car you're looking for. They're going to show up at Caddy dealers and other luxury dealers, and a lot of them are going to show up as certified pre-owned because if they're coming off lease, they're low miles. So they'll be packaged as certified pre-owned, which means there's a little bit of additional warranty on them, and they've been cleaned up and inspected, and they're warranted differently. Mm. Great way to go if you're looking for a luxury car.
Okay, there you go. All right, let's get into some stories here, Tom.
Yeah.
The first one here is that automakers are trimming production because the market's weakening, and but they want to avoid the wholesale cuts from that, 10 years ago.
Yeah, you used to run into this crazy thing, especially with General Motors and Ford and Chrysler. When things slowed down, they just discounted the cars like crazy. Mm. And we'd end up with these warranty wars, and that is not happening now. Manufacturers are much more quick, much more ready to cut production, and that's what's happening. So we're seeing production of some pretty key high-volume models, which indicate a few things. The Chevy Equinox, the GMC Terrain, and the Chevrolet Trax, these are all crossovers, and two of those are compact crossovers, which was the flaming hot market for a number of years, but that seems to be softening now. We're also seeing that Ford is reducing a bunch of mid-size crossover production as well. So, yeah, manufacturers can smell a recession in the air.
Mm.
Additionally, we've got some European manufacturers talking about eliminating models entirely. But if you look at a manufacturer like BMW, they simply have too many models as it is, which may or may not be a recessionary reaction.
Well, how soon will this? This has already started, right?
Yeah. There's a little bit too much inventory right now, but it is surprising how quickly they're acting. There's something called day supply, and that just measures how many cars there are in the pipeline between the manufacturer and the dealerships. And right now, that number is at an industry average of 67 days, which is not really that high. Typically, normal is considered 60 to 65. So, if this is considered high right now, then everyone's worried about a recession hitting pretty soon.
Mm, okay. And how often does this happen? Do they trim production only in emergency situations or anything like that?
Yeah, manufacturers don't like to do that because the cost per vehicle of production goes up. So you really ideally you have a plant operating at full capacity. So reducing capacity is not a decision made lightly, but it's better than incentivizing. In North America, for a number of years, we haven't actually had enough capacity, but manufacturers didn't want to add new factories because they're so darn expensive, and they're really expensive to have them sit idle.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why. Now we actually need a little bit less capacity, and probably will for the next 2-3 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Are there certain times a year that are better to do this than other times? Is there like a peak time to do this?
Yeah, this is an interesting time of year because we're really at model changeover anyway.
Right.
So we're probably seeing a little bit less of this anyway because you can just shut down a factory completely for 2, 3, 4 weeks so that you start up the new models if there are trim changes or any changes to those vehicles. So actually, the fact that this is happening now might mean that a lot of this cutback is being kind of hidden from the view of the public.
Wow. Okay. Well, it's out there now. This was the article that I've got in front of me is from CNBC.com.
Yeah.
And they reported on this, too. So what kind of an impact is this going to make, though?
Like, we're talking about sales. I found a couple of predictions. Last year, the industry sold 17.3 million units in the U.S., and they're talking about a rollback as deep as 16.5 this year.
Whoa.
Which is a pretty heavy fallback.
Yeah.
know, that's 4, 5, 6%. So it's pretty significant. I think we're going to see some heavy discounting briefly as inventory is flushed out, and probably just fewer 2020 showing up on lots for a while.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that as we check this out. And how bad was it? You know, they mentioned here in the article the wholesale cuts from a decade ago. How deep was that?
Well, those were terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2009, 2010, sales fell like 40%.
Oh,
it was just brutal. Yeah, this is nothing like that.
Okay.
This is super mild by comparison.
Well, 2009, 2000, we were coming off of the big 2008 recession.
Yeah, that was brutal.
It was a brutal time for any business, actually, at that time, 2008,
yeah.
2009.
And since then, we haven't really seen much in a significant contraction. What's going to happen in the next few months, maybe next couple of years, is going to be the most significant since then.
Okay. All right, well, we'll keep an eye on that. All right.
Yeah.
Before we break... for the news, we do want to mention that this is kind of a disturbing story. Deaths from running red lights is at a 10-year high.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. This is being reported by the AAA using numbers from NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. And what's most troubling about this is that I guess the red light deaths are up 28%, but total highway fatalities are only up 10%. So
okay.
It's difficult to draw any conclusion besides distracted driving,
mm-hmm.
because the total number of miles driven is up as well. So that kind of sort of explains why the highway deaths are up, but not the stoplight deaths.
Yeah, that doesn't. I mean, that's just nuts. People running red lights is at a 10-year high.
Yeah,
and this was AAA put this together. This study.
Yeah, AAA did the research using NHTSA numbers.
Okay. And how often do they run stories like this or studies like this?
That's a good question, because these numbers are all from 2017, so it'll be very interesting to see when they have the numbers for 2018 and 2019. But it takes a while, apparently, to compile the numbers.
Mm-hmm. And they do this across the country?
Yes.
So it's just sort of like they take a swatch from everywhere across the country to find out. Now, are there places within the country that have higher fatalities because of the area that they're in?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
I suspect that that's almost certainly true.
Yeah, I would guess, right?
Yeah, and I've got to think that any sort of big urban environment is going to have more of these crashes.
Yeah, no question about it. Okay. All right. You can read about that. The Chicago Tribune wrote a piece about it. It was from the Associated Press. They picked it up. But yeah, deaths caused by drivers running red lights is at a 10-year high, according to AAA. All right. Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
All right, Tom Appel is with us. He is with Consumer Guide Automotive. He is the publisher and writes a bunch of really cool stuff there. We've got more car stories to talk about and automotive news to get to, but we also want to answer your questions. Tom is here, and it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text for any questions. And you can also follow Tom on Twitter, @car_guy_Tom. And you can check out consumerguide.com as well. So more car talk is coming up right after we break for the news, which is next right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. That's played in Dave's Confused right when everybody's getting ready to go out. It's like right with the where they're trying to get into the jeans, when she's trying to fit into the jeans with the pliers when she's zipping up her pants. Yeah, I can tell you where every song in Dave's Confused is what scene it is played. I've only seen that movie a couple thousand times. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio is here, and that's me, and it is Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. We'll get to that in a little bit. Give me 2 for Tuesday. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Right now, we are talking with Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Joins us once a month. Always great to have Tom on. You can follow him on Twitter @car_guy_Tom. And if you want to jump in with a talk or text here, any questions that you have or concerns about cars and automotive stuff, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, my friend. Check this out. Taxi driver Bob sends in this text. It says, I can confirm that red light running is getting worse. People are starting to treat them as optional.
That is largely, I was driving around the city last night,
and
one of the things, too, is that people take them a little bit less seriously, as if the yellow is really, really long, and it's not.
No. No, it's not. You know, it was driving down, my folks and I were driving downtown, and we were at, we were coming eastbound on Ohio, at State, and somebody just blew right through the light. Like right next to us, it was a red light. They just went whoom, right through, and it's not like a small intersection. You know what I mean? It's not like it's a non busy intersection. Because when you're talking Ohio and State, that's a big intersection.
Yeah, I drive to work every day down Northwest Highway from the suburbs down to Morton Grove, and I see incredible things. But yeah, red lights are people go early, people go late. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is, man. Anyway, just be careful. Dan from McHenry says, hello, can you explain when and how to use the Echo button or the Eco button on hybrid cars?
The short answer is no, no one can. The Eco button is a mystery in almost every car it's in because it does different things in every car.
Oh, okay.
But one of the interesting things about the Eco button is that it's there and it's tempting to try to use it because it seems like free money. Like, why wouldn't you use it?
Right.
But there's a lot of good reasons why you wouldn't do it. Mostly because it makes driving miserable. The Eco button does a couple of things. One of the first things it does is it changes the way the throttle responds to throttle inputs, to foot inputs. So it actually changes the algorithm. So you press a little bit harder to make the car go a little bit faster.
Mm.
It does that to sort of temper your urge to try to take off more quickly. Additionally, what it'll do is move you to a higher gear more quickly, or in the case of hybrid vehicles, just a different gear set, so that you're going to accelerate a little bit slowly, more slowly no matter what. Additionally, in hybrid and vehicles with stop-start systems, it may make the stop-start system a little bit more aggressive.
Mm.
So it can save you money and it can save you gas, but odds are you're going to really hate using it.
Yeah, that sounds like doesn't sound like a pleasant experience.
No, and it does virtually nothing for you on the highway.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. No more Eco button then.
Nah, maybe not.
Maybe not. All right. Yeah. Interesting story here from Tesla.
Yes.
And it seems like we always talk about Tesla, you know.
Yeah.
It's funny because we talk about Elon Musk a lot with our space expert Rod Pyle, and then we end up talking about him with our car expert, which is you. So a couple of times a month we talk about Elon Musk. Tesla's now selling auto insurance.
Yes, it's getting into the auto insurance business for a couple of good reasons. It turns out that Teslas, especially the Model S, are very, very, very expensive to insure. So I did some checking on these numbers. Right now in the United States, the average car insurance policy for 12 months is about $1,300.
Mm-hmm.
The average price for a Tesla is
$3,300. Whoa!
Yeah. Yeah, and I found a different average for Tesla that was a little bit lower, but either way, it's more than twice as much as the average car.
Well, why is that?
Yeah, that's a good question, and that's the question that Elon's asking, and the answers vary. But the most significant thing is that he's claiming that because of all the autonomous stuff that's built into the Tesla, especially if you have the autopilot system, the car is safer. And while that is arguably true, it is also vastly more expensive to repair. All those sensors and all the autonomous equipment is extremely expensive to replace.
Mm.
And it must be replaced. You don't really repair it. So it's got to be replaced. So that's the problem. And he's trying to build his own insurance company here. And other manufacturers have sold insurance before. This isn't a first, but it is a first for Elon to try to offset that. And he thinks he can reduce insurance costs by up to a third.
Wow.
Which is a lot, but it really doesn't even get the price down to the average price for most Americans.
Right.
So it's still relatively expensive.
Yeah. And so have they started this already?
There is apparently a pilot program in California right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's starting there. My state by state is probably going to be slow because there's different insurance rules in each state.
Oh, sure.
So it could take a while to roll this thing out.
Wow. Okay. But again, he just keeps trying new stuff.
Yes, he does. And this one can help a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's going to make money on it. They're talking about this being a revenue stream, and I doubt it. But it could help sell cars.
Okay. All right. There we go. Keep an eye out on that. All right, we got some callers calling in here, and we got some texts coming in. 312-981-7200 for any and all car-related questions or concerns. 312-981-7200. Here's Robin on WGN. Hi, Robin.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's up?
Question. I have a Toyota Camry, and I had the coolant changed over the summer. A friend kind of criticized me for letting it go so long. But he said, make sure that when you go and have that done, that you have the thermostat changed. So I go into the dealership, and I tell them that this is what I want. And the guy, Reggie, there says, no, I'm not going to do it. And I said, well, please. I says, why not? I says, I've never seen that blowout in anything. And I thought, well, you ought to know. So I had the coolant changed, and it's been about a couple of months, maybe about 50 miles driven on the car, not a lot of driving, but now I'm seeing a check engine light on the dashboard. Could this be related to the thermostat?
It could be. It probably is not. The thermostat, all the thermostat really does is change the flow of the coolant. And it does different things in hot and cold weather, depending on whether or not you're using heat and stuff like that. Very simple mechanism. They used to fail a lot in the old days, but because materials are better now and things are just built a little bit better, they're really not an issue on new cars. I don't think the check engine light is directly related to the thermostat. It could be, but probably not.
It's a 2001 model.
Yeah. I couldn't say without seeing it. I suspect that's not your problem.
Mm. Okay.
Okay.
All right, Robin, thank you.
You have no idea what it would be, do you?
No, I don't. No, and a car that old, it could be anything at this point. Generally, it's emissions related.
So.
Emissions. Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, take care.
You too.
There you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200 for any car or automotive-related question or concern. 312-981-7200. So Trump attacked Ford.
Yes.
Well, among other things that he has attacked. But this is because of the rollback?
Yeah, this is a really interesting story. One of the crazy things about what Trump has done while in office is insisted that what automakers really wanted was for him to relieve the fuel economy standards. And I think we all remember that Obama had worked on extremely aggressive standards, which were going to take us to 55 point something, I think it was 55.5 MPG by the year 2025. And automakers were all like, whoa, that's a little rough. And one of the things that automakers wanted was maybe to get another 5 years to get to that number. That was the sort of relief they were looking for. And Trump is talking about just relaxing the standards where they're at now and maybe even rolling them back. Well, manufacturers are aware that this isn't going to go on forever and that they're going to have to meet standards once the Trump administration is no longer in play and perhaps once a Democratic controlled House and Congress take over. So it doesn't seem to be in automakers' best interest to just lay around and do nothing. So what they have done is a group of manufacturers, Ford, Honda, BMW, and VW, have negotiated privately, not privately, but separately with California. The reason you do this is because California, an organization known as CARB, which is the California Air Resources Board, really sets the standards for a number of states in the United States, including Oregon, California, and Washington, and then a bunch of northeastern states. And those are actually more stringent than the federal standards. So Ford just figures if it's part of this group, they can get some stability and know what their goals are. So it's not a crazy thing that they reached out to do this. These have to be ratified by all the manufacturers, but it is a start. And what manufacturers are looking for is just what the standards are going to be. And the Trump administration is not giving manufacturers that. So there is actually this sort of private sideline conversation going on.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, this is really complicated, too.
It is. It's messy. It's complicated. And manufacturers are just uncomfortable with the uncertainty.
Wow. Well, what do you think is going to happen here?
Right now, I think manufacturers are still working as much as they can towards standards. I think they thought the 55 mpg by 2025 was undoable, but I think they're going to get as close to that as they possibly can. But no one is relaxing because no one sees whatever's happening now as anything but temporary.
Right. Okay. Henry Ford would be very disappointed.
That's what I heard.
That's what Donald Trump says. Henry Ford would be very disappointed because he knows what Henry Ford would be.
Yes. Oh man, Henry Ford didn't like the V8. Henry Ford's thinking got a little old pretty quick, actually.
All right, Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
All right, Tom Appel is with us from Consumer Guide Automotive, and you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. Questions, concerns, automotive related, 312-981-7200, and we'll get back with Tom. And he's wrote a couple of really fun pieces that we're going to get to. One concerning the cars in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which is a lot of fun. So we'll get to that and more, and we'll get from you guys. I want to hear from you guys, too, at 312-981-7200. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. We'll get that going in a little bit. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. One artist, two songs coming up right here on 720. Also coming up, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right now, we are joined by our good friend Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And we've got more car news to talk about and, yeah, some other cool stuff. Let's get Tom back in here. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. So, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. First of all, terrific movie. Would you agree?
Yes, terrific movie.
And so you wrote a piece about the cars. Let's talk about those.
Yeah, I love this movie, and I love the cars. And even if you don't like Quentin Tarantino and you love old cars, you need to see this movie.
Yeah.
The street scenes are incredible in this movie.
Yeah.
And it's funny because the car guys that have gone and scrutinized this movie have found one single error. It's a good one, but no one's going to pick up on this. And it's the fact that the people who were placing the cars on this were using any Beetles they could find.
Mm.
And in beginning in 72 or 73 was the Super Beetle. And the big difference about the Super Beetle was curved glass windshield. So it is a thing that a guy looking for this can spot.
Oh, man.
So there's a few scenes. I think there's three scenes. Depending on, I've got a lot of email, and I think there's a couple of notes at the bottom of this article on the blog post that mentioned that they saw a Super Beetle in the movie. So that technically would be wrong.
Oh, boy. What, you got to be a real geek.
You got to. Yeah. Yeah. I did not pick up on this, but other people did.
Wow. That's amazing. Well, what were some of your favorites in the movie?
Well, the car that Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio were driving around in most, the 66 Coupe de Ville,
yeah,
is exactly the car I would expect, like, a one-time cowboy actor to drive.
Mm-hmm.
That is just the perfect big coupe. The color is perfect. Everything about it just feels like that kind of car. Just kind of swashbuckly. You could see horns on this car. Like, someone should have mounted horns on the hood of this car.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely my favorite car in the movie.
Yeah, that's some good cast.
Yeah, and you get to see, you know, there's a lot of driving scenes in the film too.
There is.
Like long extended scenes of just like Brad Pitt driving and listening to the radio. It's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. It reminds me of the Rockford Files in a very good way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what are some of the other ones that that stand out in the movie?
Well, Brad Pitt's own car was a fascinating pick. Cliff Booth. Brad Pitt drove around in what we think is a 1966 Karmann Ghia. The Karmann Ghia was largely unchanged for a number of years, so it's kind of hard to nail down an exact year. But I love that he drives his car, and I love that it's trashed. And there's a couple of scenes of the movie, and I'm not even, I don't know how intentional this is. A Karmann Ghia is really just a Volkswagen Beetle with a custom-made body on it. So it's not fast, and it's not a particularly great handling vehicle. But somehow, speaking of the Rockford Files, he's doing reverse J-turns and bringing the butt out around corners, which is really hard to do when you don't have any horsepower.
Yeah. Oh, man. So has anybody spotted any inconsistencies with this one?
No, no. And I think everyone's cool with that model year. So our guy John Beale at the office is convinced it's a 66, so that's probably right.
Okay. All right. And then the car that Roman Polanski and Sharon Tate have.
Yeah, this is the perfect car for sort of a neglected, slightly esoteric director to drive. This is a 50-54 NGTD, British sports car. Those cars didn't change at all during that period of time, but just really great little cars. They're strange, they're slow, but they're fun to drive. They don't have a real roof, so to speak. They just had what they called side curtains. But it's the perfect car for someone in Hollywood who wanted to seem like he wasn't everybody else.
Mm-hmm. It's a pretty cool car, I gotta say.
It's a super cool car.
Yeah, and the scenes again of them just driving in that car are pretty great.
Yeah, that's an absolutely awesome car.
And of course he drives it up to the Playboy Mansion, which is fantastic. And all right, what about the 1959 Ford Galaxy?
Well, I've learned something, and apparently I don't do enough research before I write articles, but the Manson family is driving a 1959 Ford Galaxy, and it turns out that that is historically correct.
Really?
As noted by several people at the bottom of my article. So kudos to Mr. Tarantino for getting this right. But yeah, the car is eerie in that one of those great things that you don't really see anymore is the failing alternator, where the car lights are really dim.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't really see that anymore, but they're super effectively dim in this movie.
Yeah, man. He gets the period beautifully. I mean, he gets it right, you know. And I know they spent a lot of money on special effects in order to turn Hollywood Boulevard into 1969 Hollywood Boulevard, but it comes across pretty flawlessly. I mean, the production design, the photography, recreating that time period is just beautiful in the film.
Yeah, it's a joy to watch.
Yeah, it really is. I got a couple of texts here.
Okay.
Jesse says, what does Tom think of Caravana's vending machine?
Near as I can tell, there's only one or two of those anywhere, and I think it's really silly. And you know what's funny is that Harley does that too. I think the Harley dealer between Chicago and Milwaukee, that might be Kenosha there or Racine.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have one of those really tall sort of towers of cars under glass. I think there's a big motorcycle stack. It's on the east side of the road as you're driving up to Milwaukee off 94. So I guess that's cool. It certainly gets people's attention.
Yeah, certainly does.
I don't know how many quarters you need to buy a minivan. But...
Yeah, you're going to be there all day.
Yeah.
You're going to be there all day.
Big sack of quarters.
Another blog post that you put up, The Forgotten Concept, the Pontiac Salsa.
The Salsa.
Now, I don't remember the Salsa.
Yeah, the Salsa was really cool, and it kind of, the whole point is that it's forgotten.
Right, right.
Yeah. So, to my point, the Salsa was introduced at the 1992 Chicago Auto Show, as many cool concepts are. A lot of them come through Chicago first. And it's a really interesting hybrid of two vehicles. If people might remember the Honda Del Sol, which was a sort of targa-roofed version of the Civic. It was a coupe. And they might remember the Nissan Pulsar NX, which had two different hatchbacks. One was more coupe-like and one was more wagon-like. Well, the Salsa trumped both of those, though it was never became a production vehicle. And you can either do sort of a convertible top, a wagon, or a really cool sort of business delivery thing with no glass on the side. But that was really cool. It was meant to have the three tops. And it would have been a little four-cylinder fun runabout that would have fit in Pontiac's lineup where the Fiero sort of was, but it would have been more practical. Ultimately, they chose never to build it, but it was a fun concept, and I've got lots of pictures if people want to check it out.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at the pictures now. It's a really crazy-looking car.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. Really, the wheels come all the way out to the corners. There's no overhang.
Yeah, it's so crazy-looking. And I love the logo.
Yes.
The Salsa logo with the pepper for an L.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
I like it.
That's a pretty good concept right there. So, yeah. But yeah, how would you dig up these forgotten concepts? How often do you go back and look at some of these things, Tom?
I'm going to do a forgotten concept probably once a month or so. I think I just love these things. I love the ones that no one remembers, and I love the ones that kind of did things that no one cares about, like detachable, removable roof segments. No one cares.
Yeah.
It's cool on paper. No one's buying that. Right. Because where in your garage do you put the two other roofs you're not using?
That's a good idea. That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah, some of these forgotten concepts. All right. We got one last question for you before we let you go, Tom.
Okay.
All right. Here's Dave on WGN. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, hey, enjoy the conversation.
Thank you. Good morning.
Question for you. I'm going to have to buy a new vehicle. I'm looking at a pickup truck. It's got to be a four-wheel drive, but of course, you're always hoping to find the model that gets the 30 miles of the miles to the gallon with it. Yeah, there's a laugh, right? So my question is, from what you're seeing on the new 2020 models, should I go ahead and buy a 2019, you know, as they start to lower the price a little bit, or should I wait and jump in on the 2020s?
The single reason to wait for 2020 is that General Motors has its new inline six-cylinder diesel available. And they've just gotten EPA numbers, and on the Chevy Silverado, I believe we're looking at 35 on the highway with that engine.
Four-wheel drive?
Not with four-wheel drive, no. No, that would be with two-wheel drive. Four-wheel drive, I think, is 2 or 3 MPG lower, but it's still incredibly good fuel economy for a large pickup. If you're willing to go diesel.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay.
All right.
Hey, well, thanks for that.
Okay.
I'll take a look at that one.
All right.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye. All right.
Bye-bye.
What are you working on now, Tom?
Tomorrow I'm going to put up a piece. I'm trying to remember the model year, but it is a photo feature that we're borrowing from Collectible Automobile Magazine about a 1920-ish Chevrolet pickup, beautifully restored. So this is just a lot of pictures.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that should be up around noon.
All right, very, very cool. All right, Tom, always a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And we always have a great time. Publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. Go to consumerguide.com. And we'll talk to you next month, Tom.
Looking forward to it.
Okay,
Thanks, buddy.
Take care. Tom Appel. Always always great to have him on. Always informative and always a lot of fun. It's one of my favorite segments, and I don't drive. Truly. it's one of my favorite guests and one of my favorite segments that we do, and I haven't driven in 20 years. So there you go. All right. Let's take a break here. We got the news coming up right after this.